everyone. Welcome back to Google Workspace Recap, where we review everything new to Workspace every week. My name is Jesse Nolan, my co-host is Steve Larson, and we're here to help you keep up. Apologies for last week's episode only going out on Friday. With everything going on last week, with the war and so on, I just didn't have the capacity to edit and get it out until Friday and upload it any earlier. This week has thankfully been a lot better, despite the war still going on. It's a little bit more, I guess, adjusted. Or I'm a little bit more adjusted, which is not great, but such is life. Like I said, the show must go on. So this week, my productivity should be mostly normal, and this show should go out normally on time. On another note, I'd also like to congratulate our friends Colin and Rose on the launch of the fourth season of SaaS Showdown. Look them up as SaaS Showdown on the podcast platforms and on the video side on our Tab Geeks YouTube channel as part of the Tab Geeks Network. Their first episode is fantastic. They've got the same energy and awesome knowledge sharing as before, and they've got some really cool things planned for the season, so definitely go and check that out. Steve, how's it going?
Pretty good. Yeah, I saw that new episode pop up. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but that was SaaS management platforms. I actually just came across a new one recently.
Yeah.
Speaking to them, they are based out of the UK. I'm trying to remember
which one
company.
Oh, you know.
I'm trying to remember the name of them right now. They are called. I was actually just on the site a few minutes ago. In fact. And now I forgot it. I'll find it here. I actually have a meeting with them tomorrow.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, there's been Cladera. Yeah, I've seen them going around as well. There's a couple of new ones. There was Blissfully as a SaaS management platform, and then they got bought out by Vendor, and then Vendor forced everybody onto vendor contracts, which were significantly more expensive. And I don't really like it when companies do that, and I honestly wasn't really using it all that much to really be worthwhile to buy the full vendor platform and so on. So glad to see some new blood in the race, and competition is always great. So, if you want to hear more about that, then definitely go and follow that show. Shorter show this week than last week.
Blissfully, when you said you were starting to use it a while back.
Yeah, I know. It was a great tool. It was really simple, straightforward SaaS. Basically management of all of the SaaS things, because it would, like most of these do, it's able to go into your, to Google Workspace and whatnot, and be able to detect what other platforms your users are connecting to, and then surface, okay, you've got, this billing coming in through this credit card or this email or however, each platform is different how they do it, but they essentially are able to scan your systems and say, okay, well, you've got this team with 50 licenses of Asana, and they're only like two people are using it, and that's an enormous waste of money. And so that's where these become really useful.
Yeah, I guess now the top results when you search for Blissfully is their competitor, Zlurry, which comes up because Blissfully doesn't really exist anymore, so that name's not really active. So there's a comparison page.
I've heard some good things about Zlurry as well. So definitely, like I said, some new blood in the space, always happy to see that.
Yeah, I remember I was using like Snow, which is what I used, 20 years ago, whatever it was.
Which one?
Snow software. It's really
for
old.
My time.
It was. We were required to use it for our Microsoft.
Did it run off a CD-ROM?
I think at one point it did, but it was required for our Microsoft audit.
Oh wow!
Because it was Microsoft required you to use one of the two approved vendors they had for licensing audits, and Snow was one of them.
Yeah, throw it up on the server.
Yeah,
sure. It was a CD and not a floppy.
It could have been both. Yeah. I think they sent the updates on floppy.
45 floppies in order to install it one at a time. Yeah. Oh, the dark days. I'm so glad that storage media has increased significantly and we don't have to pull garbage like that anymore.
Yeah. Well, we have a pretty normal number of updates this week, five during the week, one at the end of week recap post, and then a couple articles here from the news, things that are happening there with Google. So first, we have silent release. It's a new at mention here for the smart chips coming out, being able to use add ratings to Google Sheets. Next, there's an update here for being able to export Google Meet hardware fleet data and a bulk device configuration, so making it easier to mass update those other than what used to be just one by one to configure each of those Meet devices. So welcome change there. Next, you can now book conference rooms directly from Google Meet hardware devices. And at Jesse's favorite here, we have some full HD capabilities for group meetings in Google Meet. There's still a little caveat to it, but we're getting closer and closer full HD. You still have to actively engage and pin a video feed if you want it to be 1080.
So frustrating.
Next we have there's also some more smart replies being expanded here to everywhere you receive messages in Google Chat. Unfortunate that Smart Replies got removed from Google Voice, though, a little while back. I don't know if anyone saw that update, but Google removed Smart Replies from Google Voice, like messaging. And then last update to round things out for the week is that there's a more consistent experience for the guest list in Google Calendar. And then in the news, we have three items here. Password list by default, making the switch to passkeys. So that has, come to fruition finally. Things have kind of ironed out the kinks a bit there. I know it was a little bit cumbersome when it first rolled out. It was actually clicking more buttons than I would have done before with security keys, but that has since changed. Next one is that Google.com is testing a news-filled homepage, just like Bing and Yahoo. So some changes there to the simplified view. I'll see.
Bring back iGoogle.
Right? Yeah. So we'll see. See if that sticks or not. And then finally, another article here from the Google Cloud blog, protecting customers with generative AI indemnification. There we go. Trying to think of this word here. Indemnification.
Legal protection.
Yes.
If you get sued, they'll take care of it.
There you go.
Apparently
so. All right. Let's jump into the updates here. As I said, first one, pretty self-explanatory. Google Sheets is allowing you to add ratings, and it's really just a fancy view of putting some stars there in the cell and giving it a 1 to 5 rating. So it's really what that is in the back end there. It's just a number rating. So that's how they'll be able to get that out as you export it. It'll be a number. So that is rolling out to rep release domains now, and then scheduled release domains will start on the 30th of October.
I give this update 3 stars.
Yes, there you go. That's that. And that'll be available to all workspace and personal Google accounts. Next is that bulk capabilities to, the ability to update Google Meet hardware devices in bulk. So this is kind of a multi-pronged update here. So there will be kind of a filtered fleet data export. So when you generate an export of your device data, so that will use all of your active filters when you selected those on the device list page prior to initiating the download. So be careful about that. Previous that action, ignore the filters and generate data from every device in your entire fleet. So this will be included in that update. And changes to your fleet can now be done in bulk in CSV format. So this was really done at the individual device level before. It was not even, I think, even able to do it at the OU level. But this is, now you can do this for every device you have. And one thing it says to be careful of is that, of course, when you update these through CSV, there's not an easy way to undo any changes. So if you have to make changes, you'll have to upload those configuration details again to your environment. So also something else happening with this, so alert silencing. So you can also, it's going to be now possible to temporarily silence devices and peripheral alerts. So that will help you keep things quiet when you're kind of temporarily taking things down for maintenance and working on a device or a room. You can silence those alerts, and you can set how long you want that to be, and kind of a reason for what that silence of alert is going to be before. A couple different rollout paces for each of these updates. So first one is the filtered fleet data export. That is going to start on a gradual rollout for both. This is going to be all for rep release and scheduled release domains. That will be up to 15 days for visibility there, starting on the 12th of October. The bulk CSV upload feature, that will also be the 12th of October on a gradual rollout up to 15 days for visibility. And then finally, alert silencing, that will not start until the 7th of November, and that'll also be a 15-day gradual rollout for that feature. And of course, this is going to be available to all Workspace customers with Google Meet hardware in their fleet. All right, another update here with Google Meet. So you can now book a conference room directly from that hardware device. So when you are in a room and you haven't booked it yet and it's available, you will be able to grab that room and book it for the next 30 or 60 minutes. And also, if you need to, you can cancel an in-room booking from the device as well. This is something that will be off, though, by default. So admins, if you want to enable this one, you will have to head over to the admin console and enable that. So that'll be under your building and resources, global room settings, and toggling on book rooms from Google Meet hardware. You can also turn this feature off for specific rooms, by going in there and exempting in-room booking as well. And then let's see, rollout for this one. Oh, so yeah, just like I said, admins, this feature's gonna be off, and users, that's gonna be available on the equipment when you walk into the room, if you see it. The next one, just where there's some on and off things for the end user, I'll talk to you about that in a second on the 1080p feature. All right, rollout pace for this one. Rapid release scheduled release domains will be getting this starting the 10th of October. Also a gradual rollout up to 15 days for visibility there. And same as before with any customers that have Google Meet hardware devices. And then next, 1080p video resolution is coming to all Google Meet meetings. So not just those one-on-ones, which was previously announced for. So this is going to allow you to get that 1080p feed from a user that has enabled it. And you will see that if you have pinned that user. So that 1080p is only sent when one or more users are pinning the 1080p enabled user on the screen large enough, of course, to render that 1080p video feed. So some requirements there is just having that camera that supports that, which I think almost every camera will these days. Very few will be lower than that. End users, that feature's off by default, so you just need to enable that by pinning that and also enabling your camera to send that 1080p feed to the event. So
it's like a double confirm scenario. You both have to enable it to send it, and then somebody else has to also pin you.
I think they're trying to minimize the usage of it.
So close.
Slightly.
So close. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. It's painful.
Yeah.
I'm spoiled, obviously, because I've got the big, fancy high-quality screen, and so people just look fuzzy on meetings, and I've said it before, I'll say it again, people look better in Zoom whenever I meet with them on Zoom. I hate doing it, but if somebody has a Zoom meeting and I open it up in there, and everybody's in HD, it looks better.
Yeah. Well, you also have...
I can only imagine, video walls and whatnot, and when they're blown up that big, how terrible
not,
it looks.
They do not look better, though, if you're using the Zoom web client.
No. That's fair.
That's so it's a different kind of architecture.
Yeah, but two. I wouldn't compare the web client to Google Meet. I'd be comparing the desktop client on Zoom to Meet because that's the competition.
Yeah.
Zoom's web client is an afterthought.
Yeah. That's why I like to not install the desktop client on endpoints and be like, see, look at how bad Zoom is. It's really bad.
Nice. Oh yeah, Zoom's terrible. You can't do any of this other stuff.
Yeah.
What? Your friends can? No, they must be wrong. Gaslighting all your users. God.
This is going to only, and this is, unfortunately not available to all enterprise or all Workspace customers. It is only available to Business Standard and up. So Business Standard Plus, Enterprise Essentials, Enterprise Standard, Enterprise Starter, Enterprise Plus. But then over in Education, you get that on Education Plus, Teaching and Learning Upgrade, and the Workspace individual subscribers will get that as well. Interesting how they talk about it's available to Google One subscribers with 2 terabytes or more storage space. But then also goes to say it's not available to use with personal Google accounts. But of course it is, because if you're a personal Google account and have 2 terabytes of storage, you're able to get it. So it's a little...
conflicting.
Yeah, a little conflicting there. But so it is available to personal accounts if you have that 2 terabytes of storage. Next update we have is that Smart Replies is going to be everywhere you receive a message in Google Chat. So this means that the Smart Replies is going to be expanding from direct messages to group messages and spaces on chat on the web. So you can now start to utilize Smart Replies to quickly respond when you're on the go in a hurry or just want to take the tediousest away from typing messages in chat. So most of the time, they're pretty good, pretty useful. I don't know how often I use them, but they can sometimes be slightly helpful to get a response back pretty quickly. You still have to tap it twice, though. You have to select which one you want and then click send, so it doesn't automatically send it, which I think is, a little good thing in case you clicked the wrong thing, didn't want to send it.
I'm torn about that. On one hand, I want it to go as fast as possible. On the other hand, I do sometimes use those where it'll be like, okay, thanks, but it has like exclamation mark on it. And the exclamation mark feels like just a little bit too much. So I like have the ability to remove said exclamation mark. So, I don't want to convey too much excitement here. It's just a simple, okay, thanks, we'll do. But that being said, I also like things moving as quickly as possible because we're all way more busy than we can possibly handle. So,
Well, that one's going to be available to everyone right now and available to all workspace and personal Google accounts. And then finally, last update we have here, a more consistent experience for the guest list in Google Calendar. So some updates here to the way meeting attendee names are displayed in calendar invites and invite updates sent via email. So currently, what you may notice is that only email addresses or in some cases a mix of email addresses and names within a calendar invite. So going forward, though, you'll see more names included in the calendar invite, including the names of those in your org and those guests with whom you have interacted with previously. So... There's a before and after view here, so you can start to see what that looks like. I kind of liked the email address version, though, instead of the name version,
Oh, yeah?
Because, it's kind of like the, what was happening when you were emailing people and was saying, oh, this person's outside your organization, and they give you that warning, right? When you might type in someone's name and put their personal email address in, this is kind of the same thing. Like if I'm seeing their name, then I don't know, did I send it to the right Isaac Newton, the right Stephen Hawking, or, did I send it to his university address or his home one, don't really know where I sent it.
For those on the podcast side, these are some of the example names in the events that Google has posted here.
Yes.
Albert Einstein as well.
Yeah. Isaac Newton 12. Out.
Ah, well, Isaac Newton 1 through 11 was taken, it seems.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's some significance about 12, though, with Isaac Newton.
Is there? Did you just Google it?
I don't know. I mean, I did. But I'm not really sure what's really matching here.
Not seeing anything.
Nothing too definitive.
Isaac Newton's 12 articles in God?
Yeah, but I don't think that's...
I don't think that's it.
No, I think that's something else. Yeah. I don't know. If anyone knows what that might be referenced to, let us know.
Yeah. Hit us up. And who's Vikram Sarabhai? Indian physicist and astronomer. I learned something. Yeah. How about that?
There you go.
1919 to 1971. Initiated space research and helped develop nuclear something. Nuclear power in India.
Yeah, but then his email address is vikram.isro, Vikram Isro. So see?
Well, ISRO is the Indian Space Research Organization. That one I knew. I didn't have to look that one up.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
ISRO. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay.
Who have made some incredible jumps forward in space exploration. So...
Interesting that they would use that as the email address, and then okay, interesting. Someone did a lot of work here with the screenshots on that, creating those.
Somebody is obviously a fellow space and physics nerd who is also on this team here. So, good call outs there.
And you saw the location too.
Zurich, what is that? CERN. Yeah.
Well, no. Miss Miu is actually a restaurant, just a restaurant in Switzerland. So it's I don't know, just a Korean restaurant in
Is it
Switzerland.
around the
So
corner from CERN?
I don't know. I guess could be. Probably not. No, it's like right downtown, right by the main station.
I mean, CERN is a mile long underground, so theoretically, somewhere. They're full of little Easter eggs here. I love it.
All right. So details on this update, you need to just turn on context sharing within your directory settings to ensure the profile names are displayed. And users will start to see that change in your calendar invites when this rolls out. And that is rolling out to rep release domains starting on the 13th of October on a gradual rollout up to 15 days for visibility. And then also on the same gradual rollout, you'll see that starting on the 25th of October for those scheduled release domains. And this will be available to all Workspace and users with personal Google accounts. That wraps up the updates for the week. Over to you, Jesse, for news updates.
Sorry, I'm still Googling Miss Miu.
Oh, okay.
It's
Yeah, I think
3 hour drive away from CERN, so maybe not.
it's just, I mean, concerns over in Geneva, isn't it?
That's on the border. But yeah. It is, I mean, it's in Geneva. It's on the border of what do you call it? Anyway.
Yeah, but assuming is, but
Over to
this is
the
a restaurant.
news. Right. Okay, so over to the keyword, Google's blog, safety and security section. Passwordless by default, make the switch to passkeys. Always a fan of them talking about this because that means that it's continuing to move forward and being promoted, and more people can learn about it. We've talked about passkeys a bunch of times on this show here. It has been working quite well for me. Steve, have you had a better experience? You were complaining recently about some of your
Definitely.
passkey
Oh yeah.
logins.
No, I mean
Yeah, now it's
it's
better.
definitely faster, better. I mean, like I said, I was even getting in with passkeys that weren't prompting me for any like fingerprint or password, you know, once I logged into the device itself, that acted as a passkey.
Interesting. So, this article is also talking about how more groups are adopting passkeys. So, YouTube, Search and Maps, which are obviously Google products, but also Uber, eBay, I think Starbucks, I also heard. WhatsApp is working on it. So, every step towards getting rid of passwords and adopting a more secure option that is also simple, fast, and easy to use is just a step closer to less people getting hacked for stupid reasons, such as garbage passwords. So, big fan of that. If you're curious about more of this, then go ahead and read the blog post in the show notes. And now, my yearly plea to bring back iGoogle, which is basically for those who are newer to the Google world, back in, oh, I don't know, 2004 or something. Possibly earlier, they had a homepage that you could customize with your own personal widgets and things like that. And it looks like this is pretty close to that. It's got the Discover feed on it, just like you do on mobile. You've got At a Glance, which shows some of their stock information, or a football game for the European folks out there, the non-Americans, soccer for the Americans. And the weather up there. So, it's interesting. I think it's a good move. Some people may think it's a terrible move. I think that it's a good move as long as the homepage loads with your cursor in the search box so that I can still just continue directly from there. Although, quite honestly, given that I use Chrome for everything all the time, I don't ever actually go to google.com for much. So I would if all of this stuff was on here. The question is then, are they going to put ads on it? What's it going to look like? Essentially, they are testing it and considering it. Apparently, this is something that Bing and Yahoo still do. Those are two pages on the internet that I try very hard not to go to, if at all possible. So I wouldn't actually know. I do know that every time I open Edge, it's trying to get me to go to Bing and use it for anything they can, which is rather frustrating and annoying. The Verge reached out to somebody at Google about this and was told that the homepage here is an experiment that's currently being run in India. So I guess we will see if it continues on here and if it expands around the world. They do reference here that once upon a time, Google worked this way with iGoogle, where you could customize your Google homepage with various news, weather, and stock widgets. So interesting. You know, it's always good to see Google still playing around with these different things and figuring out better ways to make it an option. And, you know, quite frankly, hey, Google, make it a... I just set off all of your things, didn't I? Including my own. Set off all the Google Homes and Assistants, damn it. make it an option. You know, give me the ability to what do you call it, to choose, right?
Yep. Yeah, and that iGoogle was actually launched May 19th, 2005, so you're very close to the year there. It lasted about 9 years, looks like. November 1st, 2013 is when it went down.
Right. Apologies for the harsh cut there, folks. My wife was calling, and I thought something was urgent and required my attention, so I picked up there. Back to the show. Moving on from that Google News article, the last one that I have here is another Google Cloud blog. This is actually brand new. I just saw it today. They were talking about it in one of the communities that I'm in, but essentially, Google is stating on their blog here that if you are using Duet AI and you are generating content, if you are challenged on copyright grounds, they will assume responsibility for the potential legal risks involved. Essentially, they're saying that their trading data is that they stand behind it, that it's safe. They have this standard of third-party intellectual property indemnity as a standard for all customers, but a lot of people are very nervous about this and want clarification into how this works. Specifically, they state here, our training data indemnity covers any allegations of Google's use of training data to create any of our generative models utilized by a generative AI service infringes a third party's intellectual property right. What does this mean for customers? Essentially that, like I said before, regardless of the training data underlying their services, Google indemnifies you, which means that they will take care of it, their fault and not you. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I don't exactly know how all this works, but a lot of people are talking about this and this being a big deal. I wonder if some of the other companies that are doing generative AI are also... are also offering this. I haven't seen anything, but that doesn't mean that they're not. I don't see everything that's put out there, even if it's all about Google. Lastly, here it says the generated output indemnity means that you can use content generated with a range of products, knowing Google will indemnify you for third-party IP claims, including copyright, assuming your company is following responsible AI practices like the ones described above. And this covers basically Duet AI in Workspace, in Google Cloud, including Duet AI for assisted application development, Vertex AI Search, Vertex AI Conversation, Vertex AI Text, enabling API and multimodal embeddings, visual captioning, visual Q&A on Vertex AI, and finally, Kodi APIs. So this is a big deal. I'm sure we'll hear more about this in the coming days. And this is posted with the VP of Legal on Google's Cloud blog, which is why this is all legalese sounding and difficult for me to actually get out of my mouth because I'm not used to speaking legal words, as well as the VP TI Security and CISO of Google Cloud. So big deal here. If you're interested in more information, there are some links in this article, so go and check it out in the show notes. And with that, you had a super long show last week, or relatively long show last week. Nice and short this week, under half an hour, so I will let you all go. Thanks for sticking with us again. Check out SaaS Showdown. There's going to be a link right over here, or here. I forget exactly where I put it on the end video screen. Do me a favor and click that and go and enjoy that show next. Hit the subscribe button if you haven't. Leave a review on YouTube. And thanks if you're on the podcast side for always listening to us and staying with us week after week. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time on Workspace Recap.